Happy Saturday, everybody. You are listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont, Community Radio, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM on your dial. Or maybe you're listening online, or maybe you're listening again later this week online. You can catch all of our shows for up to 2 weeks online in the archive. And I'm so glad that you're here today, because my name is Amy, and this is Amy's Kids Show. And every Saturday, I get to come in here and play, and it's so much fun. And we've been celebrating human play, actually, and human brains, and what makes our brains so special. And how to keep our brains exercised and thinking, and especially that thinking brain, which is at the top of our skull. Inside our skull, our human thinking brain is at the very top. And that's what we were celebrating last week, and we're going to keep celebrating, because guess what, guys? You know how magical the world is. Well, the world is so magical that it is magical for hundreds of years going forwards and backwards, maybe even more than hundreds of years. I actually found a story, a really old story from South America called The Tale of the Lazy People. And believe it or not, it is precisely on the theme of our thinking brains, and it is precisely on the theme of if you don't use it, you lose it, right? And so if we don't do our own thinking and our own remembering and our own planning and our own dreaming and our own creativity, if we don't use our creativity, it kind of goes away. It's like a muscle. If we don't use our muscles, they do something called atrophying. They atrophy. And when muscles atrophy, actually, the muscle cells just sort of dissolve and go away because we don't need them anymore, right? So if we don't use our arms, our arm muscles will atrophy, and then we won't be able to use them anymore. They're going to be weak, right? Well, our brain is a lot like that. If we don't use our brain, especially kids, when you're young, that's when your brain is growing. You've got to use it. You've got to feed it fresh oxygen all the time, every second, so that those brain cells can fire. Right? They burn sugar, and they fire, and they think, of all kinds of great ideas. Well, this story was written a long time ago. And guys, this is the magic part. I think it predicted screens. It predicted a long time ago that someday humans weren't going to have to do anything for themselves anymore, because there were going to be these machines that do them for them. But of course, because it was hundreds of years ago, they couldn't think of what a machine would be. So they thought of something else instead. And I can't wait to tell you. Let's see if you can tell from some of these first songs. In about five songs, we're going to have a song on the theme of the special creation that did all our work for us in the story. I can't wait, guys. I'm so glad you're here.
What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? One can help another one, and together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world? Harriet Tubman was alone on that darkened road to freedom. But she couldn't leave her people far behind, no, no. Moses stretched out her hand, and she led them to the freedom land. For she knew that she had justice on her side. What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? One can help another one, and together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world?
When Sojourner Truth was free, she got down on her knees, and she prayed to God to help her on her way. With her voice and with her might, she fought for what was right, for she knew justice on her side.
What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? One can help another one, and together
together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world?
Rosa Parks sat on the bus, and the driver said you must move to the back of the bus or be thrown in jail. But she stayed and stood her ground, and she brought that old law down, for she knew that she had justice on her side.
What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? One can help another one, and together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world?
Brother Martin Luther King told the world, I have a dream. And he led this country's fight for human rights. We must fight for liberty until all of us are free, and we'll know that we have justice on our side.
What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? Another one, and together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world? What can one little person do to help this world?
A problem that I see throughout humanity and all across the land. Each one of us is linked to an ancient instinct that we don't understand. It fills you with an urgency, it feels like an emergency, it makes you want to kick someone's rear. But that's probably a bad idea. That's probably a bad idea. There's a fellow on your street, and every time you meet, he seems to make you mad. He cheats at all the games, he calls you lots of bad names, he brags about his dad. But if you feel inclined to whoop that boy's behind, as soon as his mom can't see ya, it's probably a bad idea. It's probably a bad idea. A bad idea screams in your ear and tells you what to do. But if you hear that bad idea, just let it pass on through. Now even governments, sometimes they've got no sense. Here I understate. They can cause great disruption, death and destruction, and then they escalate. They'll find an explanation to harm some other nation and tell you that the choice is clear. But it's probably a bad idea. It's probably a bad idea. Somebody reeling, remember what you heard right here. It's probably a bad idea. It's probably a bad idea. It's probably a bad idea.
was a scratch on my finger from the cat. I was only petting him, would have thought he'd do that. It doesn't feel good, that's a sliver of wood from a bench in the park where I sat. So I think I'll need a Band-Aid.
Need a Band-Aid.
Maybe three or four,
or five or six or more.
And a bottle of that spray stuff we just got at the store. Some sticky tape, a roll of gauze, and you can be so kind. A washcloth and a piece of ice, but not the iodine. No iodine. There's a bump on my head from the wall. What I was playing with the beach ball. I was climbing in a tree when I fell and skinned my knee. It hurt, but I didn't cry at all. But I think I'll need a Band-Aid.
Need a Band-Aid.
Maybe three or four,
or five or six or more.
And a bottle of that spray stuff we just got at the store. Some sticky tape, a roll of gauze, and you can be so kind. A washcloth and a piece of ice, but not the iodine. I know iodine. There's a hole in the sleeve of my shirt. On my arm there's a scrape and some dirt. My friends were very sad, but I said it's not too bad. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even hurt yet. But I think I'll need a Band-Aid.
Need a Band-Aid.
Maybe three or four,
or five or six or more.
And a bottle of that spray stuff we just got at the store. Some sticky tape, a roll of gauze, and you can be so kind. A washcloth and a piece of ice, but not the iodine. I think I'll need a Band-Aid.
Need a Band-Aid.
Maybe three or four,
or five or six or more.
And a bottle of that spray stuff we just got at the store. Some sticky tape, a roll of gauze, and you can be so kind. A washcloth and a piece of ice, but not the iodine. I know iodine.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess. Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up. Everybody sing. Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess. Yeah, boy. Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up. Tell me why now. There's a puzzle piece under the chair, and the comb for my new doll's hair. The race cars that I love to share, how did they get under there? Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess. Yeah, boy. Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up. Whoa-oh. Oh my goodness, look over there. Stuffed animals are everywhere. If I don't put my things away, how will I find it when it's time to play?
Tell me now.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess.
Yeah, boy.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up.
Tell me now, why are these crumbs all over the floor? My mama asks when she comes in the door. Is it from the cookies I gave you to eat when you asked me for a treat?
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess.
Yeah, boy.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up.
The basketball sitting in the hall. Computer games just about to fall. And what is that over on the wall? I don't want to get in trouble at all. Oh no!
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess.
Yeah, boy.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up.
Let me see. Put all my toys back in the box. And then pick up all my dirty socks. Then put my books back on the shelf. Hey, I'm so proud of myself. Yay.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I'm the one who made it, I do confess.
Yeah, boy.
Oh my goodness, look at this mess. I think I better clean it up.
Now everything is back in place, and me Baba has a smile on his face.
Yeah, boy.
I must admit, I feel pretty good. Feeling up like I knew that I should.
responsibility. Yeah, oh my goodness, look at me, growing up positively.
One more time now.
Oh my goodness, look at me, accepting responsibility. Yeah, oh my goodness, look at me, growing up positively.
Hey! The first time.
Growing up positively.
I'm so proud of myself.
Growing up positively.
One more time now.
Growing up positively.
Say, hey, take a look, and I think you look green. You never saw nothing like my little monkeys. They can dance on your head on the top of a tree. They are really such marvelous monkeys. They dance for the king and the queen and the prince. They danced in their diapers. They've been dancing since. No monkeys are finer, you'll soon be convinced. They are really such marvelous monkeys. Hey, look at you, better watch what they do. Cause you never saw nothing like these guys before. They were amazing, astounding, and amusing. Confound and confuse you, and what is more. Come watch them jump through a ring of real fire. With flames burning hot, but they hardly perspire. Seated myself, I'd have called you a liar. They are really such marvelous monkeys. But they hardly perspire. If I'd not seated myself, I'd have called you a liar. They are really such marvelous monkeys.
Ya está oscureciendo, el sol se metió, flotan las estrellas, suena el tambor, salió mi morena y dispuesta a bailar, y el negro sin...
Well, folks, did you guess what the animal is that's going to do all the work for the people in the story? They were monkeys, right? And like the song said, if I didn't see it for myself, I wouldn't believe it. So seeing is believing to our brains. But we're not going to see the story today because you're going to hear it on the radio. You're going to hear it through these words in this story, which means that your thinking brain that understands words and thinks about things and plans your actions and gets creative and invents new stuff, that amazing part of your human brain is going to have to understand the story and make your own pictures in your head. And so, yes, there are going to be monkeys. There are going to be people. There's going to be an old man that I'm really curious about because we actually don't learn very much about the old man who brings these amazing monkey creatures to this village and gets the monkeys to do all the work for the people. Doesn't that sound great? Right? If you could just lay in your hammock all day and sleep and relax and let other things do your work for you. Well, first of all, what's a hammock? Do you all know what that is? It's like a swing that people can sleep in, right? We string, sometimes made of fabric, sometimes made of woven materials. And so we hang it usually from trees or from inside the house, from the rafters, and we can sleep in it. It's like a bed that hangs above the ground. And that's what the folks down there in South America, where this story came from Colombia, that's what they used to sleep in, the people who were originally from that area. And so this is the tale of the lazy people. And it says, here's a little bit about the story. Charles Finger, the author of Tales from Silver Lands, collected these stories from all parts of South America. This one comes from Colombia. From it, we learn not only why there are so many monkeys, but also why they throw nuts and branches at people passing through the forest. Okay, so here we go. This is a really good story. Get comfortable, find a good spot. Maybe get something to drink and something to snack on. It's a good time for breakfast if you haven't had any yet. All right. Long, long ago, there were no monkeys, and the trees were so full of fruit and the vines of grapes that the people became lazy. And at last, they did little but eat and sleep, being too idle to carry away the rinds and the skins of the fruit that they lived on, and certainly too lazy to clean their thatched houses. It was very pleasant at first, but soon not so pleasant. For winged things that bit and stung came in thousands to feed on the things thrown aside, and they too grew lazy, finding so much to eat ready at hand. And when people tried to brush them away, there was a loud and angry buzz and much irritated stinging, so that soon everyone was wonderstruck, not knowing exactly what to do. For a time, it seemed easier to move the little village to a new spot and to build new houses, for the dwellings were light affairs, and in a day or less, a good house could be built. But then they lived by a lake from which the water for drinking was taken. And as it was but a little body of water, it was not long before the people had built right along around the still pool and so were back again at the starting place. As for the stinging flies that came because of all the fruit rinds laying around, they were soon worse than the mosquitoes, while a great wasp with a pink head and legs and bands of black and gold on its body, though it was very pretty to see, was the worst of all. So it was no easy matter to know what to do, and there was much talk and much argument, and all that the people agreed on was that something had to be done, and that very soon. One day there came to the village a queer and rather faded kind of man, ragged and tattered and torn, as though he had scrambled for miles through the thornbush forest. He had rough yellow hair and queer wrinkles at the corners of his eyes, which made him look as if he were smiling. It was late in the afternoon when he came, and the people were taking their rest after the noon meal, so no one took much notice of him, although he went here and there looking at things, and so walked around the lake. But the curiosity of everyone was excited when he was seen to make a basket, which he did quickly, and then commenced to gather up the fruit skins and rinds in one place. Now and then, someone or other raised himself in his hammock with a mind to talk to the old man, but it seemed almost too much trouble. And when some great blue-winged butterfly fluttered past, or some golden-throated hummingbird flashed in the sunlight, their eyes wandered away from the old man, and they forgot all about him again. So the sunlight died, and the forest was a velvet blackness, and everyone slept, though the old man still worked on. And the next morning, when the people awoke, he was still working diligently, though he had but a small place cleared after all. The very thought that anyone would work all night made the head man shiver with a kind of excitement. Yet he was very curious to know why the stranger went to so much trouble, seeing that he neither lived there nor was of the lake men. At the same time, it made his spirit droop to think that, if the place was to be cleared up, he and everyone else had a mountain of work in sight. So Tara, the head man, called to Cuco, who was his servant, telling him to bring the stranger to him. And Cuco, who was very respectful, said that he would attend to it. Then Cuco did his part by calling Yana and delivering the message to him. And Yana, in turn, told his servant Mata, who told his servant Para, who told his servant Rakus, who told a boy, so that at last the message reached the old man. Then back went the old man, handed by the boy to Rakus, by Rakus to Para, by Para to Mata, by Mata to Yana, and by Yana to Cuco, so that at last he stood before Tara, the head man, and the others, being curious to know what was afoot, gathered about. "What is your name? From where do you come? And what do you want?" asked Tara, putting his three questions at once to save trouble. Then the head man looked at those about him with a little frown, as much to say, "Note how wisely I act." And each man who had heard, seeing that the head man looked his way, nodded at his neighbor as though calling attention to the wisdom of the head man, so that all went very well. But the little old man stood there very simply, making no fuss at all, and quite unimpressed with the greatness of the great man. "I want to work," he answered. "I want to be told what you want done and to see that it is done." To be sure, the language that he spoke was new to those who listened, but somehow they seemed to understand. But the thing that he said, they found truly astonishing and could hardly believe their ears. But the head man, though as astonished as anyone else there, quickly regained his composure and asked this question. "What is your trade?" "I have no trade," said the old man, "but I get things done."
"What kind of things?"
"All kinds of things."
"Do you mean big things, like house building and all that?"
asked the head man. "Yes, and little things too, which are really big things when you come to consider," said the old man. But that seemed an odd, if not a silly thing to say, the head man thought.
"Little things, left undone, soon become big things," explained the old man, and waved his hand in the direction of a heap of fruit skins and husks nearby.
"Yes, yes, but you must not preach to us, you know," said Tara, a little testily. "Tell me the names of the trades you have."
So the little old man began to tell, naming big things and very little things, things important and things not important at all, and having finished, asked very politely whether anyone there had anything to be done. As for pay, he said he wanted none at all and would take none, and he said that because some of those gathered around him began offering him things. For instance, Para said,
"If you work for me, I will let you have one fish out of every 10 that you catch, for I am a fisherman."
And Rakus pushed him aside, saying, "But I will do better, for I am supposed to be fruit gatherer, and will give you 2 things for every 10 that you gather." And so it went, each bidding higher than his neighbor, until it came to the turn of the man whose duty it was to gather the rinds and the fruit skins. He said,
"I will let you have not 1 out of 10, nor 2 out of 10, nor 5 out of 10 that you gather, but 10 out of 10 if you will work for me."
At that, the old man said quite positively that he would take no pay at all. No more was said then, and the little old man turned away without as much as bowing to the head man. Seeing which, the head man waved his hand and said,
"You may go, and so that you will lose no time, you need not bow to me."
And all the rest gathered there said very hastily,
"Nor need you bow to me either."
The old man took small notice of anyone, but went away singing, for he had a gay, light-hearted disposition. And having reached the place he had cleared, he took flat pieces of wood and began cutting out figures, like little men, and each figure had a kind of handle that looked like a long tail. Nor did he cease whittling until he had made at least 20 wooden figures for each man in the village. Being finished, he stood up to stretch his legs and straighten his back. And when the people asked him what the little figures were for, he shrugged his shoulders, but never spoke a word. Then he lifted the figures that he had made one by one and set them upright in the sand until there was a long row of them, and took his place in front of them like a general before his army. It was beautiful to look at, for one figure was as like another as one pin is like another. And for a moment, even the old man stood admiring the line. After a moment, he waved his hand in a peculiar way, spoke some magic word, and waved his hand again, at which each of the figures came to life and nodded its head, seeing which all the people laughed and clapped their hands. The ragged man bade them make no noise, but watch. "Since you do not like to work," he said, "I have made 20 figures for each of you, and they will work for you, without pay, doing what you require them to do. Only observe this. You must not give any figure more than one particular job. And now let each man or woman clap his hands 3 times, then call out the name of the thing to be done." When he had said this, the figures started running, 20 gathering in a circle about each man there, bowing from the hips and straightening themselves again, so that their tails of wood went up and down like pump handles. "Now see," said the ragged man, "you have things to work for you, and as I call out, the figures will stand forth, each ready to do his task." And he began calling thus, "Armadillo hunters, stand forth." And 100 and more active figures ran together like soldiers. So he named the others in order as bread makers, cassava gatherers, despolvadores, who would gather up the dust, esquiladores, who would shear the goats, farsante men, whose work was to amuse tired men, guardas, to keep order about the place, horneros, or bakers, industriosos, who were to do odd jobs everywhere, juamentos, whose work it was to carry burdens, labradores, to do heavy work and clear away garbage, meladores, to grind the corn, narradores, who told stories and related gossip, and so, oleros, or pot makers, pasilga figures, to attend to the pigs, queseros, to make cheese from goat's milk, rumbosos, or proud-looking things to walk in parades, that's a tough job, I suppose, servidors, or food carriers, trotadores, to run errands, vaqueros, to attend to the cows. So everyone was well pleased, and each one had his 20 figures to do all that needed to be done. And all that day there was a great scraping and cleaning and carrying and carrying and hurrying and scurrying. Silently, the little figures worked, never stopping, never tiring, never getting on in one another's way. And all that the living people had to do was to rest and watch the men of wood, and keep their brains free for higher things. For it must be remembered that before the old man came there with his wonderful gift, the people had complained that there was so much to be done that they had no time to write poems, or to make songs, or to create music, and that with the daily tasks abolished, their brains would be more active. Not 2 days had passed before the children of the place complained that they did not have a chance, and that they had so much to do with hunting for things and looking after their small brothers and sisters, keeping things in order, trying to remember things that they were told, and cleaning things, and a dozen other tasks that children have to do, that they really had no time to play, much less to study. So they went in a body to the old man and asked him to give each child 20 figures to do odd things. There was a great deal of fire and expression in his eyes when he made answer that if the children really needed help, he would lose no time in providing it. But the young people were quite positive that they were overworked, and the long and short of it was that the old man whittled out many, many more figures, and in another 24 hours, each and every boy and girl had his own. There was an abanaquero, or fan maker, so that none had to pluck a palm leaf, a balaquero figure to carry letters and messages, a cabrero to look after the goats, a dasalumbrado to hunt for things in the dark, an enseñador, or private teacher, who was never to scold, a florista to save them the trouble of gathering flowers, a guasón figure to amuse them, a hojaldarista whose work it was to make cakes, a huergo figure to arrange games, a keeper of things, lector to read and tell stories, mimo to act as a clown, niñero to look after the younger children, obediencia figure to make others obey. Ooh, these are things children have to do, huh? Even today. A pastor to make things, to buy things for them. A quitar figure to make things, to take things away when the children were tired. A recordación figures, or rememberers. Solfedores to sing to them. Tortada men to make the pies. Volantes as servants. And so on. So the things seemed to be going very well, and before a month had passed in all that place, there was not a thing out of order. Nothing was soiled or dirty. Nothing was broken or bent or lost or misplaced or undone, unclean or disorderly. Neither man nor woman nor child had to worry. Dinners were always prepared, fruits gathered, beds made, houses in perfect order, and all was spick and span. All that the grown-up people had to do was to look on, and no one was proud of the order in his house because every other house in the place was as orderly. As for the children, they had nothing at all to do but eat, drink, rest, and sleep. Then, presently, more figures were called for, as this one or that one wanted a larger house, a finer garden, or grander clothes. But as the wooden figures became more numerous, and as no figure could do more than one task, the ragged man had to make figures for the figures, and servants for the servants. For as things went on, there had to be more fruit gatherers, more water carriers, more scavengers, more cooks, because the figures had to eat and drink. Thus it came to pass that before long, each of there being 20 figures for each man, instead of there being 20 figures for each man, there were 60 or 70, with new ones coming from the old man's knife every day. Soon the lively mannequins were everywhere, inside houses as well as outside, thick as flies in summer, and certainly a great deal more persistent, for there could be no closing of doors against the mannequins. Indeed, had anything like that been attempted, there would have been a great cry for special door openers. So many houses were quite cluttered with wooden men, those who were on duty rushing about until it made the head swim to look at them. And those who were resting or sleeping, for soon they had learned to rest and to sleep, lying about the floors, piled up in corners, or hanging to the rafters by their tails. All that increase in help had made for the production of 1,000 or more guardas, whose task it was to keep order. And they were everywhere, alert and watchful and officious. And the real people had to step about very gingerly sometimes to avoid treading on them and annoying them. At last, there came a day when the people began to grow a little tired of doing nothing. And they told one another that a little help was a very good thing, but help in excess, too much of a good thing altogether. So there was a meeting and much talk, and the mannequin noradors, whose duty it was to carry gossip and the news, were very busy, rushing from here to there with their scraps of information.
"It is very clear that something must be done," said Tara, the head man.
"But everything is being done," answered the little old man. "If everything is done, something must be done."
"I did not mean that," said Tara, who seemed a little testy. "I meant to say that these wooden men must be kept in their places."
"But they are in their places," replied the old man. "Their place is everywhere because they do everything. So they are in their places."
"You see, the days are so very long and so dull," said the man who wished to have time that he might become a poet. "At the shut of the day, we are not weary."
"We do not want to be petted," said another.
"The trouble is," sighed a fat man, "you can't be happy when everything is done for you."
"And we don't want to be nobodies," shouted another.
Another said very mournfully, "It seems to me that when these wooden things do things with our things, then the things that they do and make and care for are not our things."
"Too many things in that speech," said the fat man.
"Well, there are too many things," answered the other. "Look at me. I used to be a gardener, and now I'm nothing. When my garden is dug and planted and tended and watered, and the very flowers plucked by these wooden things, and when other wooden things pick up the leaves and pull the weeds and do everything, then my garden does not seem to be mine." He added after a while, "I hope you know what I mean, because it is not very clear to me. Yet it is so. I remember..."
At that, the little old man put up his hand and said, "But that is against the contract. You must not try to remember. Really, you must not. Because there are mannequins to do all the remembering for you, if you please."
"Well, but I think," began the man, when he was again interrupted.
"Please, do not think," said the little old man. "We have things to do the thinking, if you please."
He thought for a moment, his bent forefinger on his lips, and then he said, "I'll see what can be done. It is clear that you are not satisfied, although you have everything that you asked for, and certainly all the time that you want."
"Let us do something," murmured Tara.
"I'm afraid there is nothing that you can do," said the little old man, "because, as you see, everything is done, and when everything is done, it is quite clear that something cannot be left to be done. The only thing that is clear is that there is nothing to be done."
At that, the meeting broke up, and each went to his own hammock to think things over. And soon the general cry was, "We must have elbow room." And hearing that, the little old man went to work and whittled more figures of wood, a whole army of them, 10 for each living man, woman, and child. And in voices that creaked like wooden machinery, they marched hither and thither, crying, "Elbow room! Elbow room!" Soon there was confusion. It was mannequin against mannequin for a time, the elbow roomers thrusting and pushing the other working mannequins, some going about their work with frantic haste, others interfering with them, clutching at them and at the things they carried, a tangled knot of them sometimes staggering to go down with a crash. Soon in every house was a jangling tumult, mannequins and men running about in houses and dashing out into the open spaces outside, the noise of slamming doors and breaking pots, the clamor of animals. Above all could be heard everywhere cries of, "We want elbow room! We want elbow room!" Soon men were running away from the houses with those strange, swift mannequins hanging on to them, sometimes beating them, while other mannequins threw things out of the doors and through windows, food and household things. And excited children fled, too, while their mannequins ran at their sides, some chattering, some acting the clown, as was their duty, some telling stories as they ran, while other strange little figures of wood ran bearing heavy burdens. It was all a dreadful mix-up, with no one knowing what to do, no one knowing where to go, and everywhere the mannequins, who were guardas, or order keepers, ran about, tripping people and mannequins alike in an effort to stop the rush. But when the day was near its end and there were no people in the houses and the hammocks swung idly, for all the men, women, and children, even the white-haired grandfathers and grandmothers, had fled to the further side of the lake where they could have elbow room, leaving the houses and all that was in them to the mannequins. The next day, the people plucked their fruit for themselves, and it seemed as though fruit was never sweeter. The water that they carried from the lake tasted better and cooler than water had for many a long day. And when night came, they were happily tired and slept well, without any mannequin to swing their hammocks and sing to them. And in the morning, they woke early to discover the pink and gold of the sunrise most wonderful to see. And there was music in the sound of the wind among the grasses. So as the day passed, they were both amazed and astonished at the wonderful and beautiful things that they had almost forgotten. The sight of butterflies fluttering from flower to flower, the shadows chasing across the hills, the richness of the green earth and the blueness of the sky, the gold of sunlight on the leaves, the rippling water and the bending trees. Indeed, the memory of the mannequin days was like a fearful nightmare. Very light-hearted then, they grew, and the world was full of the music of their laughter and song. And briskly they worked, enjoying it all, building new houses and making things to put in them. Meanwhile, in the village, things had gone queerly. For one thing, the elbow roomers had kept up their crowding and pushing so that the mannequins, trying to work at their old tasks, and there were many who went on just as before, were sadly hindered. There were other figures of wood with nothing to do since the people they had served were gone, and these fell to quarreling among themselves and grew mischievous. For instance, the pot makers and the pot cleaners fell out, and the pot cleaners started to break the pots, so that the pot makers would have to have more work to do. Well, that meant that the clay gatherers and the clay diggers had to work harder then, because they worked harder, though to be sure all their work meant nothing and was little more than idle bustle. They grew hungrier and wanted more to eat. Because of all that, the fruit gatherers had more to do, and the water carriers had more work and had to work harder, and the cassava and bread makers had to bake as they never had baked before. And that brought the fire builders into it, and of course the wood gatherers also, for they too had to work harder and to eat more, and still more work came on the food bringers. And so all the time that the elbow roomers rushed about, always in groups of 10, driving and commanding, rushing on workers and sweeping them aside. So everywhere were little figures hurrying one after the other, going to and fro, busy about nothing, quarreling about nothing, fighting about nothing. Well, the trouble came when the elbow roomers interfered with the dogs and the cats and the goats and the hens, pushing and hustling them. For the animals, disliking all disorder and clatter, fell upon the mannequins, workers and idlers alike. Seeing that, the household utensils took a hand, and the very pots and kettles ran or rolled or fell, spilling hot water over the wooden things with pump-handle tails. The very embers from the fires leaped into the fray, and all the while from the matatas in which the corn had been ground came a low growling, and the growling formed itself into words. Day by day you tortured us, grind, grind, grind. Holi, holi, hokwai, hokwai, grind, grind, grind. Bring us to the torturers, grind, grind, grind. Let them feel our power now, grind, grind, grind. So the matatas turned and turned, going round and round without hands, and presently an elbow roomer that was struggling with a corn grinder stumbled, and both fell between the grinding stones, and in a moment were crushed to powder. In a flash, house utensils and animals learned the new trick, and in every house, mannequins were pushed into the grinding stones. Then sparks began to fly and roofs to catch on fire, and mannequins bolted here and there in confusion, sometimes jamming in doorways. There were so many of them, all in such disorder. Then came dazzling, flickering lightning and a great rain, so that for very safety the mannequins fled to the forest and climbed the trees. And there they have lived ever since, for they grew hair and became monkeys. But the remembrance of all that passed stayed with them, and in their hearts to this very day they have no love for humans. And for that very reason, when a human passes through the forest, we must look up well and check out the trees, lest the mannequins, in revenge, try to hurt us by casting nuts and branches at our heads. Well, guys, apparently that's what monkeys will do if we walk through the forest these days. They're still angry at us for ruining all their fun as our mannequins. but I think they're having fun in the trees, too. So that was an interesting story. That gives us a lot to think about. Let's do some thinking, and let's do some rocking and rolling here as we get ready to end the show. Thanks for joining me for the tale of the lazy people.
You got what it takes, then you take what you got and get going.
Load them up for Bobo's School of Exploring.
So if you want to get ahead, get a load of what I'm telling you. Don't you listen to the lies that the world keeps telling you. Don't hang around with all of them fools. Come and get a gander at the golden rules. And if you got what it takes to grow, you better take what you got and go. And if you got what it takes, then take what you got and get going. Get going. Get going.
Well, folks, we are just about at the end of Amy's Kids Show here today. And thank you for joining me. We took a long time to tell a long story about the lazy people, but there's just so much to think about in that story. I have to tell you, I read it, you know, a week ago, and I've been thinking about it all week. You know, who was the little old man who came there? And you know, were the people better off having, you know, the mannequins do everything for them? And, you know, nowadays we do have machines and we have workers who do things for us and help us out so that we don't have to do all these things like build our houses and make our food and grow our food. And, you know, but all those machines and people, you know, they all need things too. So then we need more things. And then it just keeps removing us from, you know, the actual stuff of life. And my favorite part of the story, I honestly almost ended it at the part where the people, you know, form a new village across the lake. They get their elbow room back and they go across the lake and they start doing things for themselves and how much they love it, right? And how I'm sure it gave the poet more ideas for poetry, and I'm sure it gives the musicians more ideas for music and the storytellers more ideas for stories. I mean, where are you going to come up with all that stuff if you aren't out there actually living life, right? And so I really hope that people are able to put their machines aside today, their screens and whatever else, you know, and get out there and really live life and get your nose right to the ground and see those bugs and see those plants and feel that breeze. You know, we did have a storm that came through here earlier this week, and it took down some trees. There was a lot of wind and rain, kind of like the storm that happens at the end of the story I read. That's why I thought that was kind of magical. And after the storm, you know, I saw this big tree come down, and after the storm, all the birds in that neighborhood were just talking. They were talking about the storm, I'm sure, and talking about the tree that came down, I'm sure, and telling each other all about it. And so stories are definitely something that we share with a lot of other creatures on the planet, but only humans with our thinking brain can invent stories that never even existed before and think of things like these mannequins, right, that could do all of the jobs for them. I mean, what an idea, right, that somebody thought of a long time ago before they had ever heard of machines or electronics or anything. And so who knows what we're going to invent today, guys, right? We have a whole future coming up. And what are you going to do, right, to help us think of ideas? Well, get out there and have some fun. Let your thinking brain be creative and inventive and tell stories and find meaning and, of course, love each other. So thank you for joining me. There's plenty of excellent shows coming up the rest of the day. Enjoy your Saturday, guys. Have fun.
What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? What can one little person do to help this world go round? One can help another one, and together we can get the job done. What can one little person do to help this world? Harriet Tubman was alone on that darkened road to freedom. But she couldn't leave her people far behind, no, no. Moses stretched out her hand, and she led them to the freedom land. For she knew that she had justice on her side. What can one little person do? What can one little me or you do? In an
endless quest for bigger books, you really ought to.
Hi, this is Luisa Maite, and you are listening to WGDR Plainfield and WGDH Hardwick.